welcome to Clan Chat Online, another edition and a chance to catch up with a former player who played for the club this week. As you can see, he's down in the bottom, the former netminder, Chris Holt. He was with us between 2015 and 2016. How are you, Chris?
I'm doing pretty good, Craig. How about yourself?
I'm good, thank you. Thank you. And then top left-hand corner, Jerry McLaughlin back with us. How's things in Planet Jerry?
Yeah, good. I never played in net, but I've been eating so much during COVID. I think I'd probably be quite a good goalie at the moment, actually. Well, I reckon I could do it, man.
It was always part of my strategy. You know, the bigger you are, the fewer holes there are.
Yeah, do you know, I remember you saying that to me. I remember like you talking about, you know, when the goalie pads started shrinking, when the equipment was getting smaller. I remember, like, obviously the season you're with us, you turned to me going like, goalies like me, you're going to be in demand. You're going to want, they're going to want big guys.
I know.
Big guys.
I fell in the weird, in like the weird transition time between people wanting, you know, when I was starting my pro career, they wanted like the Marc-Andre Fleury build of like just this slender, bendy, acrobatic kind of goaltender. And then when they started making the gear small, you know, they started looking for bigger, taller, you know, guys, but I just seemed to fall in that weird gray area where nobody wanted me. And then when they should have wanted me, it was too late. I was already in Russia. And it was like, man, this tough break on my part.
That sounds like a potential for a brilliant blues song that you could write, man.
I know.
The ballad of Chris Holt.
You can have it all, just not all at the same time.
Oh, right. There's a lyric. Get that lyric down.
You got it right there. Hey, right, we've got
goalie,
so much
goalie blues.
We've got so much.
I'm going to give the music career a run. I swear to God, I just got to write one hit. You know.
Right. Time is already upon us. Chris has actually been kind enough to join us during a working day, so we've only got limited time on this. So it feels like we've got so much to get through as well. But
let's
start. Yeah, Chris. Your years in Glasgow. We spoke before and reflected on your time. You had a great time, and what a year it was to kind of finish up on. What were the highlights that stood out for you?
There were a few highlights for me. I think a personal highlight for me was being on a club and on a team with, you know, English speaking players again, and, you know, loads of Canadian guys and people that you could actually have a relationship with. So on a personal note, that was a huge highlight for me. From a playing perspective, I think obviously being able to get a Champions League win was a huge moment for us as a club. And that game was certainly exciting. And we had our struggles in the Champions League leading up to that game. And I think we were all quasi-confident that we could hang in there for a while. But, you know, when things went well and, you know, Bruce scored that highlight goal and the crowd was buzzing. And I mean, we were in a dogfight with that team, but I think being able to pull out a win there was one of the highlights, I think, of the year for me, as from a playing perspective.
I'm glad you brought up the CHL, of course. It's 5 years pretty much this time of year when we were all in Sweden and Germany, and obviously the games at home, which you touched upon there. Chris, Jerry, that trip 5 years ago, so many great memories. Where do we start?
Yeah, it's difficult, isn't it? I mean, from different perspectives, we've talked about a lot of, you know, the pluses and stuff. We've talked about, like, the big heavy defeat, people meeting up with players on the flight over there and stuff. But one thing I'll particularly remember with you, Chris, is obviously after the Bécois game, what a baptism of fire that was. But I think I was sitting with you at the meal afterwards, and, like, the Bécois team are all... they all come in as well, and they're all sat over there. And you're chatting, you're like going, like, I think I must have faced like 50 odd shots. I was like, it's high, it's like near a 70. It was like, I'm pretty sure it was in the 60s, way into the 60s. And I was like, I'm not counting like this anymore. No. But that was quite, I mean, you saved enough shots for about 10 games in that one game, let alone the ones that went in.
Well, yeah, I was going to say, I might have saved enough, but I think I also let 10 in. So it was like, you know, I came off the ice, and I was sitting next to Keither and Gary or somebody. I was sitting next to Gary, and I think I looked at him. I go, you know, I don't think it was that bad. Like, I think I did all I could do, you know, I don't know. But then, you know, everybody was kind of like looking at each other going, oh my God, like, what did we get ourselves into? And a lot of us had just arrived to the team, and, you know, and McKeever hadn't even practiced with us yet. Like, we were just getting to know each other, and we were in a real tough spot because I think those teams had already been together for several weeks. And So that I think we were really behind the eight ball from the beginning. And obviously being in the EIHL, you know, you're not really in the cream of European leagues. And so we were already kind of, as far as skill-wise and talent-wise, we were way down the spectrum. That game was very eye-opening and easily the most difficult hockey game I played in my pro career. Of, you know, I don't even know how many shots there were, and there was an awful lot of goals, and I did not want to play them again. And it was just like, oh, man. But it made that victory at the end, I think, all the more sweeter to go from that game to how we played, you know, not more than a couple weeks later and not really having any games in between other than the Ingolstadt games. I think how far we came in such a short time as a group, and that's a big testament to Finner and Jacko and Keith and those leaders that, you know, brought us along that far so quickly, made that victory for us very, very sweet and, you know, what we hoped would set the tone for a successful season.
Do you think Rick Jackman was a big leader? Sorry, Craig.
No, you go
over there. Do you think Rick Jackman was a big part of that transition right at the start, particularly because it's funny because I know you'll have felt it as well, Craig. I know, like, Jacko wasn't really keen to do a lot of big interviews. That was not like his comfort zone at all.
Never answered his phone. Like, never. That's what my life is like nowadays. Nobody answers their phone. I mean,
he'd had a long, distinguished career, you know, and he's played in some brilliant places, had a tremendous NHL career. But how important was he, particularly, because we always hear about Matt Keith, we always hear about Finner as well. How important was Rick Jackman early on in such a big competition like that? It's just interesting to hear you mention him there.
Yeah. I think he was really instrumental, and he and I were very close throughout the year. I thought that what he did for some of our younger D and bringing up, you know, the Scottish guys and really showing them how to balance playing, you know, pretty good defense as well as being able to be an offensive threat. I think that just his knowledge of the game and really bringing those guys along was huge, because he brought McKeever did a similar thing, but he was mostly, you know, defensive minded, where Jacko was not afraid to jump up. And when you had guys like Arson and, you know, a lot of the names are escaping me now. There was a young Brit D man.
Sully.
Yeah. So when you had guys like that who are kind of just sort of, you know, Arson had been around, but, you know, Sully kind of just breaking into the league a little bit, and just being able to watch somebody like that and how they manage the ice, and his skating ability was phenomenal, even at the age of 50 or however freaking old he was. You know?
I think he was only actually 39, wasn't he? I think.
Well, however old he was, I'm still not that old. So it's, he was old. So I think he, you know, I don't know if he got as much credit as he probably deserved for really being a leader on the back end.
Now that helped me
tremendously.
Yeah, I mean, at that time in the CHL was fantastic. You know, we spoke before, Jerry, about, you know, being over there in Sweden and Germany. And I think we saw the team come together, and you've touched upon that as well, the way you all gelled. I mean, to see a team go from perfect strangers to a team within those four games was quite something to watch.
I mean, you were forced to do it. I mean, we got smacked, you know, 10-0. So it's like, well, we better figure this out pretty quick, or this can be a long couple of weeks. So we were, you know, very aware of the speed at which we needed to come together, because, you know, we wanted to make Glasgow proud and we wanted to make the league proud and not be a joke or an embarrassment in that tournament. And, you know, we put together a pretty good effort on the road at Ingolstadt. It got away from us at the very end, but we were in that game for a long time. And then the Vekwa game at home, I think, was close for a while, and that wasn't obviously near the blowout that it was, and then to finally get the win. We knew we had to come together pretty quick, or else it was going to be a really, you know, embarrassing showing for our league and for our city.
You know, it was Ryan Finnerty brought that up just a few weeks ago when Craig and I were chatting with him on the Clan chat, and he mentioned that Vekwa, the second game, as well. And you look at that, and he's almost as proud of that one as the victory. Because when you look at it, there was that kind of belief. You're like, oh my, this is really close. We're running this really close. And if you imagine, just if it wasn't for a couple of things here, I know that's the hockey gods and what have you. Imagine we did get that result in Ingolstadt. And imagine we got a result against Vecco at home. End up going through in that group.
Might have gone through, yeah.
It's so close from a blowout, and albeit, you know, like ultimately we didn't win those games, so easy to get carried away. But I mean, such fine margins between one of the best results in our history. It could have been three of them.
Yeah.
It could have been. I mean, that the loss to Vecco at home gave us a lot of belief that we could we could hang in there. And I know, and people forget, but I remember very vividly how we did benefit a little bit from the structure of this tournament. And I remember Ingolstadt, I think, pulled their goalie with the tie game because they couldn't afford a tie. They needed a win. And I didn't know that at the time that they did it. We had a face off in our zone and I wasn't looking down there. and then we, you know, we end up scoring that goal and I'm looking around going, where's the goalie? Why is there no goalie? I don't understand these rules, these soccer rules that you guys have and all this.
You didn't know, Chris, because otherwise you'd have probably had a shot.
I don't know. So it was, we did benefit a little bit in that result from the structure of the tournament. But hey, I'll take it. You know, we'll take that win and skate off, happy clams. So
it's interesting. You talked about the way the team came together. I spoke with Matt Keith last week for a piece in the Herald, which was published on Monday, still online, by the way. And he mentioned the fact that you came together after that Vecco game. And it was a case of saying, right, never mind where you guys have played in the past, what leagues you've played in, who you've played with. You're together there as a collective. You were the Brayhead clan. Was that something that was discussed in the locker room immediately after that game?
Yeah, and things like that, they come up multiple times during the year where, you know, I don't know if we really had an issue with it, but as a good leader that he was, it is always good to remind people that, you know, it doesn't really – when you're in the battle, it doesn't really matter where you've been or whatever. Everyone's got a job to do, and you're doing a job for this team and no one's bigger than the team and all that kind of stuff. And so that stuff is always good to recite every now and then, especially when things start to waver or when things are going poorly. And so I wouldn't recall such a statement, but I've heard it a million times. So I wouldn't be surprised if that was something that was said. And I don't know if we had a ton of characters that needed the reminding of that, but it is always a statement that brings people together when, you know, it doesn't matter if you're a rookie or a 20-year veteran, we're all, you know, skating for one goal. So good leaders recite that probably a few times a year.
It was talking about leaders. It was interesting to see that season coming in, there's a lot of talk about for Thinner as a head coach and someone who hasn't had an NHL career. And all of a sudden you've got all these resumes. No. Landing on your lap, going into this prestigious tournament, you know, you've got like yourself performed in the show and just come as a KHL All-Star, and you've got, you know, Keither and Mizey, all these other NHL performers, and you've got Jackman's got a ring, Stanley Cup ring. You're like, that was going to be a really interesting challenge for Finner to see how you managed him. Was there any sense of that from your meetings with Finner? Did you get any sense that he had to handle that, or was it just, did it seem quite a seamless transition into him being that leader, take you into the Champions League?
If anything, I think that in sometimes when you get into a situation like that where you have a lot of players with resumes that are far more extensive than your coach, sometimes you can get into a place where you think you know better, or you would be doing things a different way if you were the coach, because you know you've had all this experience.
Yeah,
you've played for the best coaches in the world, and why would we be doing this and blah blah blah. And if anything, that would be a time where Keith or somebody would say, look, like it doesn't matter what you know or whatever, he's the coach and this is how we're going to play, and if we're not all on the same page, and it's not going to work no matter what we're doing. So whether you agree with it or whether you don't agree with it, or whether you think we should be doing different things or have, you know, a more extensive playbook or whatever the situation is, you've got to all pull in the same direction whether you agree with it or not. And you can bitch and you can whine, but if you're not doing what you're being asked to do, because all five guys have to be on the same page. And if you're not, it's not going to be successful no matter what. And you're not going to win just on one individual skill versus a whole other team who's, you know, rowing the boat the same way. So when, you know, I don't think it came up too much, you know, I'd be lying if I said I wouldn't have, I would have done things different, you know, in some situations. But
every player would.
I think every player that year probably would in some situations where we thought maybe we should be doing something different. But at the end of the day, you know, Finner's the one who's being paid to make those decisions, not me. It's my job to execute what he's putting on paper. And if you're not executing what he's putting on paper, then the onus is on you as a player. Right. You can't turn around and look at the coach when you're not executing what the coach says, because he'll always be able to say, I'm telling them what to do and they're not doing it. So you've got to put your own thoughts aside sometimes. And Finner was very approachable, and you know, you could go in and talk to him about some things that you thought or whatever. I think I found him to be pretty approachable. But at the end of the day, if it's, you know, if he wanted to play X way, we were all expected to go out and play X way. And that's and I think as a player and as a professional, you have to be able to put your own feelings aside and go out and execute what, you know, your coach is asking, whether you agree with it or not.
I'm going to ask you about one particular member of the team you grew quite close with in your year here. It is Gary Russell. Of course, he was your backup in that whole year. How did you two strike up such a strong friendship, and do you still keep in touch nowadays?
I'd like to credit my own likability. But
no, really, come on, how did you
get as a goalie and as, you know, part of the goalie brotherhood, I think every time you get on a new team, you're always going to go right to that person, and you know, you're partners now. And I've never been on a team where I looked at the situation as me being one and them being two or anything like that. It's always just been, we're part of a team and we're going to push each other. We're our own little team within a team, because what we do has nothing really to do with what they do. And when you don't have a dedicated goaltending coach on the team, then, you know, we relied on evaluating each other and talking about scenarios. And I think it was his willingness to be a really great teammate and understand maybe the situation for what it was, that he wasn't going to play a ton. But still maintaining a truly professional attitude and a great attitude towards me as a player and a person. And then at the same time, us being able to push each other in practice and compete with each other in practice and play fun games with each other on the ice. And, you know, he made me better that year, and I hope that I made him better that year. We had a lot of good discussions on different scenarios, and he was always somebody that you can lean on when you're sitting there and you just lost 10-0, you know, like you can, he was just right off the bat, just a really great guy and somebody that, you know, we played rounds of golf together and we did a lot together outside of the rink. And, you know, I've said it a million times that he could have gone, his attitude could have easily gone a different direction, to, you know, woe is me, I'm never playing, what the hell. And, there were definitely stretches of the season where we were having a hard time and I was having a hard time. And, you know, he still wasn't getting the games, and it could have got probably pretty ugly between us. But he was just a true professional, and, you know, I was very thankful for my time with him. We don't keep in touch too much other than, you know, some Twitter banter here and there. I am admittedly not a very good long distance friend. So it's that's probably mostly on me. But I really did enjoy my time with him there, and he was a great teammate who definitely kept me focused and kept pushing me on a daily basis.
There we go. High praise indeed. Now, we're going to go to one of the questions from the fans, and this takes you back to your time in Russia. Now, I don't know if Rory knows something that I've missed, but he's asking about your weirdest experience during your time in Russia. The meteor hitting Earth, having dinner with the mafia, or something else. Your eyes kind of lit up in recognition there. So the meteor, what's that all about?
Well, those are two of the crazier ones. you know, there were so many weird experiences from over there, from, you know, the travel situation and hotel accommodations at some of these places. And it was an experience from start to finish, and not a lot of guys lasted. There were, in my 4 years that I played in that league, so many times would a North American guy come over at the beginning of the season and join the team, and he'd be gone in a month. He's like, not doing this. This is like, can't do it. Not doing it. Won't do it. Going home. And that happened a lot, but I think you've got to go over there with the right you know, mental capacity to deal with that, because it is a different people, it is a different culture, you know, there's just from the food to the travel to the accommodations to the, you know, not having shampoo in the locker room and not having tape, but you got jars of caviar at lunchtime, and it's like, are we cutting corners in the wrong areas? Like, we're cutting the corners in the wrong areas.
Caviar for lunch every day.
But I can't get 10 more sticks, you know, like, but I can have caviar for lunch every day. So it's, you know, just kind of the weird things like that, and what's valuable to those people and to that culture is a little bit different than might be what, you know, I don't need caviar, but I need tape, you know, like, so it's, it was just an interesting time. But to narrow it down to one experience, there's too many. It's just like it's a jumbled mess of experiences up there. But having dinner with, you know, a head of mafia and, you know, spending a couple nights in airport jail, and just like, there's just too many things.
I feel as though we need a whole nother show to get to the bottom of all this. This is just
awful. I know. Those are stories I tell over a few cocktails. That's
what were the fans like with you in those kind of teams? And did you find people all over there who spoke a lot of English? Because you mentioned about it being quite an isolating experience.
I think it depends on where you were. Like, my time in Riga was fantastic. There was a lot of, you know, it's a very touristy city, a lot of English. And the fan base for the team is phenomenal. And you're treated like a celebrity in that country. So that was, I would say, probably the most fun I ever had playing hockey was playing for that team. And then you find yourself in Siberia where there's only, you know, you're only allowed 4 imports on that team. And what they got was like a couple Czech guys and a Swedish guy. And the Czech guys don't even really speak that good English. And the rest of them are Russians, and they're from way out there, so they don't speak any English. I got one coach that I can kind of talk to because he spent time in the NHL. And other than that, I can't even talk to my head coach. I can't talk to anybody. So that was a really isolating kind of experience. And it's almost like, you know, you're being paid really well to do it, but you're serving kind of a, you know, kind of a prison sentence where you're just in your, you know, you're in your house for 20 hours a day, and then you're going,
oh my word,
you go to work for, you know, for whatever, 4 or 6 hours, and then you just go back home and you wait for tomorrow. And so
make it better or worse that the position that you play is an isolating position as well? You're out there on your own anyway. So did that make it easier in the sense you're like, well, I kind of, this can happen? Or, you know, and also you can get on with your own job, can't you, as a goalie?
Yeah.
Or is that isolating because you're not actually speaking the language of hockey as much as you would in another position?
It made it easier in the sense that I couldn't screw up the systems that we were being asked to play.
Save the puck.
Yeah, just save the puck. And if you have any questions, just revert back to answer one, which is just save the puck. So I couldn't screw up anything team-wise, so that made it easier. But I think as far as just the living situation for me, and, you know, other people were better at it than I was. And you know, they might have got out a little more and done a little more things. But until I could really speak the language pretty well, it was a risk to leave your comfort zone. And it was a risk to leave, you know, the couple blocks around where you live, because how do you tell a taxi driver your address? How do you, you know, how do you get on with daily life? Like, it's just, it just was a challenge. Even
did
going
you just throw a cat then?
Yeah, I threw a cat.
Just thought we were going to let that go for whatever reason.
No, I tried to be slick with it, but...
You're slagging off Russia.
He was gonna walk across the frame. Yeah, got it. So yeah,
we'll edit it out.
No, anyway. That's getting left in. Sorry, man. Sorry.
Next question.
Right, a chap called Big Andy on Twitter is asking. Well, he says, "Hi, Chris. Loved how open and honest you were about everything during your time in Purple, and how good you were between the pipes. Rule one, butter you up. First question is, which Clan player, if any, would most frequently try to go bar down against you in warm-ups?
Probably Jacko. I mean, that guy would just come down and he didn't really care. I mean, he cared about me off the ice. He didn't seem to care about me on the ice. Come down and I don't know. At the end of the warm-up, you have this, on most teams, you have kind of this semicircle shooting gallery type thing where they receive a pass and they come in and shoot. It's kind of the end of the warm-up typically. And I would usually only stay in for 5 or 6 because as the season goes on, that semicircle gets closer and closer and closer. And so I'd say in that particular drill, it was more the warm-up guys trying to, you know, come down and rip one around my ears that would be more frustrating than any practice. I expect to get hit in the head. You know, I know the job I'm doing. And so Gary would always get a lot more upset when he would get hit. And I'm like, Gary, you're standing in front of the net. Like, also, you're not 6'5". So when you go down on your knees, your head is below the cross. Like, that's a goal. You know, you got to save it.
So he would get Jackman the hardest shot? Is Jackman the hardest shot you've ever faced? Because I know you were saying that year, you're like, geez, oh, he has got an actual bomb.
Yeah, it was good when he would – you know, lean into it and, you know, have like an uncontested where he could really kind of line it up and go. And wow. His shot was heavy, but there were other guys that had oddly heavy shots. You know, for me, it's not even so much the velocity. It's the guys that can, when they shoot it, some guys tend to have a lot of spin like on the puck as it's coming to you. So things don't just like ricochet off, they like drive themselves like into your body. Just like bullets spinning into your chest, and it's like, oh god, you know, someone like like a Lee Esdert or somebody, they're just guys that have sneaky shots that just are really heavy and just hurts. It's not necessarily velocity wise but no matter where it hits you, it's just like, oh god damn, like, yeah, why do we got to do this so early in the day? And so there were some of those guys, but yeah, I mean, Jacko certainly, you know, had a really high caliber assault rifle that he carried around with
him, so. Just a memory from a Fiona Jones, she says, to be fair, she liked the fact that you did a lap of honor after your last game. That'll be the playoff game against Fife when you knew you were retiring, and she says it was emotional for you for sure. I remember speaking to you that night. And as we say in Scotland, the tears were blinding you a little bit. It was an emotional night for you and for the club going out the way we did as well. But I think for you, it was like a sudden feeling, wasn't it, that was it, that the career was over and that would be you for the last time?
Yeah, I mean, it's obviously a really difficult task to go out on a win. You know, you have to win it all. And so most careers end on a loss. And I think that you always know that that's, you know, a likely possibility. And you know, I felt that I had a pretty good performance in that game, and so and honestly, I think the goal they scored was a little controversial. I think Fritsch got dumped right in front of the net, and there was, you know, probably should have been a penalty on that particular play. But when the puck finally went in, it does just unload on you that's it, you know, it's over now. And It's a little self-indulgent, but yeah, I mean, I took my time getting off because I knew I wasn't going to go back on. So, you know, you take a lap and you thank the people for supporting you for the year. And, you know, I can remember standing at the gate to get off, and I just didn't want to get off. You know, I just wanted to just stay on there. And I think about that a lot, you know, and it's just now recently that I've kind of gotten back into being around hockey. And, you know, I joined a men's league out here in Nebraska where I'm not a goalie. I play a forward and I'm terrible. And I have knees that need to be replaced and I'm just awful. But it is a lot of fun now to be back out there on the ice, and you remember, and it's fun to tell stories in the locker room to those people that don't really know who you are. Didn't really understand. Oh, there's this guy on this men's league team that had this really long career. And I think a lot of the emotion that was coming out of me in that moment was my, you know, and a lot of guys are like this, so I'm not the only one by any means, but my journey to get to that moment was very difficult, and it was a lot of grinding. It was a lot of sacrifice. You know, I wasn't with my family for a decade, and I had there were a lot of other emotions going on other than just like, this is your last game. It was sort of like a culmination of all the strife and struggle. You know, I didn't live this glorious NHL life of living in Ritz-Carltons and flying on fancy jets. You know, I was roughing it. And but as I said, a lot of guys do. But I think a lot of that was coming to me at the same time, where it's like, this wasn't an easy, smooth ride. And the life that some of my friends live, or who are still playing or recently retired, who had long NHL careers, we just had very different lives. And, you know, so I think there was a lot of that kind of coming out in that moment too, where it was just a lot of struggle.
Do you hate those guys?
No, I mean,
is that why you were crying?
I would have traded places
in the NHL right now.
I would have traded places. No, I mean, look, you go where the opportunities are, and some of them got opportunities to get up and play and stick there, and you know, I never got those opportunities to get up and play and stick there. I got a few cups of coffee, and it wasn't really a legitimate chance to make a team or to stay on a team, and I had to go find my own other ways. And was fortunate. A lot of people had my back and vouched for me, and I got a lot of great opportunities in other countries and other leagues. And I probably wouldn't trade it all for nothing, even though I can, you know, barely walk upstairs now, and you know, I definitely skate like a senior citizen. So it was just a lot coming to me in that moment, just from, you know, 12 years of really, really having to make some tough decisions and sacrificing a lot, you know, personal life wise, and even just, you know, living condition wise, it was just rough for a long time.
Okay, well, we'll leave it there, Chris. We're being mindful of the time and that you need to get back to work. So thank you so much for joining us on Clan Chat Online. Just a few things to wrap up. We want to wish all the very best to Sean Skelly, who's left the club to take on the general manager's role at Glasgow Rocks, the basketball team. Big opportunity for Sean there, Jerry. He'll be missed around the office, I'm sure.
Yeah, Sean's been awesome for the club. He's just one of those people that's just like holds everything together, just gets stuff done. He's been a brilliant servant to the club, and what a fantastic opportunity for him to go on to. So obviously we wish him all the best. He'll be sorely missed.
Definitely. And also all the best to Mathieu Roy, who's left the club. He's joined the Kalamazoo Wings in the ECHL. So we wish the King all the best there. Clan Classics this week, Saturday, 7 p.m. on the YouTube channel. It's the Clan against the Cardiff Devils. That's one to enjoy. Can't wait to see that one again. 50-50 tickets and Shut Off the Backs will be on sale as well. It's Felix Antoine Poulin's jersey also. Right, as I say, time is getting on. Chris has to go back to work. Chris, thank you so much for joining us in Clan Chat Online. We could have done a whole nother show with some of the stories you've got, but listen, we're glad that you've come on board this week anyway. All the very best to you.
Thank you, and anytime, I'm happy to do this. This is fun stuff to relive these days, so whenever you guys need some content, I'm here for you.
Jerry, good to chat with you, man.
Yep, definitely. Jerry, all the best. We'll catch up again soon.
Cheers, bud. All the best, guys.
And that's all from us on Clan Chat Online. Bye for now.